when we were younger and playing, lived and breathed it, you know. I played it from being a little 8-year-old in just on green or in clearing in wood, and they'd get a, if they didn't have a ball, they'd roll some old socks up and things like that and go playing near where he lived and play rugby.
Roger Millward was a true great. Although just 5'4" tall and just over 10 stone, he was a giant in the game. He played at off half for most of his career, moving to scrum half only in later years. Millward was born in Castleford in September 1947, coming to prominence as a schoolboy starlet in the then ABC television Intertown Junior Games in the early 1960s.
I was a class act, I like a class act, I like a class act.
After making his first team debut as an amateur in October 1964, he signed for his hometown club on his 17th birthday for £200.
Miracle player, miracle brilliant player, brilliant player, brilliant player, brilliant player. It was just a legend, what I do, it was just a legend, what I
do,
it was just a legend, what I
do,
it was just a legend, what I
do. I can remember when they played OKR it was semi-final, I think, for Wembley. It would replay down Castleford. I can remember going to watch him in that. These were early matches. In fact, they closed shops in Castleford for people to go, and schools and everything, because it was a big thing. And they couldn't all get in the ground, so they were just knocking fences down and everything to get in, you know. I can always remember that game down there.
The judge is a brilliant player.
And he was so sensational playing on the wing, this young little strip of a lad. And it was so entertaining that I think that matches were focused not on Castleford but on him. Me viewing from afar was mesmerised by him in essence, this young lad, how super he was, you know, entertaining and had all the assets of being a future star.
Amazing.
My first game we played in a friendly, and I forget whose benefit it was. I think it was a dual benefit for a Castleford player and an Old Kingston player. And it was a lousy day at the ground there. There was a lot of surface water, and I remember Roger pushing my head and face under the water and mud and said, "Welcome to Rugby League." Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant player.
When they were playing matches, and at that time it'd be Green Final had come out, and he'd have had a good game and it'd be on headlines and things like that, and we'd go out and people would be going, "Oh, well done, Roger," and obviously you notice stuff like that, but to you they're just Roger.
Castleford at the time had two international halfbacks in the established partnership of Hardisy and Hepworth. Despite acting only as understudy to these two, making a few appearances on the wing and playing in the A team, Millward was chosen for Great Britain at just 18 in March 1966. He was clearly too good not to be playing regular first team football. And Rovers chairman Wilf Spavin asked his Castleford opposite number for a first refusal if ever they decided to sell.
I signed for Ollie was 1966, and well, at first he'd mixed feelings, because I don't think he actually knew that they were selling him until it happened, more or less.
When he received the call in the summer of 1966, Spavin wasted no time. It was, without doubt, the best investment the club ever made.
People used to say it was all the sixes. 1966, they paid £6,000 for a new player.
Number six. He always said it's the best thing he ever did. because he loved it, and he loved Hull, and he loved all the people there and everything. So he never ever regretted it. He said it was the best thing that happened to him.
Magic, magic.
Some of the things he did were exceptional, though. Really were. I never forget, we were playing, and I said, oh, I'll stop outside him. I'll stop outside my opposite player, Rog. I said, just give me the ball. Just give me the ball straight. And he said, which side do you want it on? Do you want it on your left-hand side or your right-hand side? On my chest, I said, oh, just give me the ball. That's how much of a precision instrument he was. That's what, you know, it was something different and could do everything.
Quick, half a yard and gone, you know what I mean? It was unbelievably fast.
One of the best halves that I've
seen. Bill Wood made his Rovers debut at Hunslet on the 15th of August 1966, scoring his first try in his first home game against Batley a week later. He scored 25 tries that first season. The following season's tally of 38 set a new season's record for an off-half in rugby league, as well as making him the league's top try scorer.
For me, he was the best I've watched rugby league all my life, and he's the best player that I've seen, either in the past or the present. So for me, it's an absolute privilege, the fact that he played for the club that I love and support.
Two gentlemen, one
on
off the pitch, one
on
the field.
With a total of 29 Great Britain and 17 England caps, Millwood enjoyed a glittering international career.
And I was privileged in 1970 to take him to Australia on tour. And he just, you know, you thought you'd seen everything of him. And playing against Australia, the might of Australia, you suddenly saw him emerge at another level. You know, a super international level, and in the third test match he was absolutely sensational. Scored a sensational try. When he went on that rugby field, he was somebody special.
Conversion by the brilliant Roger Millwood, who personally scored 20 points in the match. Australia just can't break through the England defence. And here's Millwood again, on his way to equaling the Anglo-Australian points record in a test. Another try from Alan Smith, and for the inspired Millwood, the kick's a mere formality. In the second half, the formula's unchanged. A try from John Atkinson, followed by the inevitable Millwood conversion, puts England further ahead. Then the same two players are involved in a splendid movement when Millwood gathers Atkinson's kick forward to go over for a brilliant try.
But it was a great tour. We won the last two tests, and it was one of the major reasons that we were successful. It was part of a group of guys who toured, and that's the last time we beat Australia in a test series. And he was one of the key instrumental players who enabled that to take place. Yeah, absolutely special player.
In 1970, Millwood also took over the Rovers captaincy, leading them to a Yorkshire Cup success the following year. After relegation in 1974, Millwood played a big part in the Yorkshire Cup success and promotion the following season. And a short summer spell with Cronulla in Australia followed in 1976.
He took Kay for a walk to the beach. And I said, oh, did you like it, Kay? Was it nice at the beach? She went, yes, but a little lip. And she went, but I want to go home. Well, that set me off. I said, oh, and I want to go home. So there's Roger there with us both crying, wanting to go home. We'd only been there about 4 hours. And he signed his contract. So he said, don't worry. When everybody had gone, he went, don't worry. But I'll go see you tomorrow. We'll go home if that's what you want. I'll go and sort it out. I don't think he had any intentions, like, but obviously when we'd all had a sleep and following morning everything seemed a lot brighter, so we had a great 6 months there, loved every minute, and we were crying then because we had to come home.
We were playing Cronulla at Cronulla, and we're in training, and this Paul Brown says, right, I want somebody to do this Millward, I want him out of the way. So anyway, we're on there, so he got this Neil Pringle, oh what hell of a player. They got it all sorted, that you know, he was going to stand about third man out, fourth man out, and he was going to come in on angle and take Roger, who was either first or second receiver. When I got home that night, I phoned our Roger up, and I said, right, just be careful on Saturday. So when we get out on field, Roger stands 3, 4, 5 yards deeper than normal. This Pringle's flying out at our line, leaving big gaps at either side of him. Roger, as good as he is, within like 20 minutes, half an hour, they were 15 points up.
I've been watching 70 years. He's the best player I've ever seen in my life.
Then, when Harry pulled dad so tragically in 1977, the Robins appointed Millward as player coach. In that role, he led them to Floodlit Trophy, First Division Championship and Challenge Cup successes, before a fourth broken jaw in 12 months led to his retirement from playing. Fittingly, his last first team appearance was in the 1980 Wembley Final, when he achieved a career ambition of lifting the Challenge Cup and a club record fifth trophy as captain.
I think it's going to go very well. The lads are full of themselves. No pressures whatsoever at the moment. They're just enjoying a good sing-song on the way and just taking everything in that's coming by them.
Swamped almost by the whole experience and the sights and the sounds, but that, you know, that never goes away, and I count myself really lucky that I managed to make that game, and I can truly say I was there.
So we had a talk, me and Roger, and I said, look, if we do three dummies, which is 1, 2, me step to one side, get somebody coming off me, Lowie, Rosie, whoever, come, sidestep away from me, and I just put ball up. So we got Hubbard, and we got it, and it came off. We tried it maybe half a dozen to a dozen times in training, and it never worked. Never worked once. And I said to Roger before we went out at Wembley, I said, Roger, I said, I'm not doing that move today. He says, do it, do it. It'll come off. And it was his idea.
Little genius, I think, is
just standing very wide, and Hull are coming round to try cut the supply of blood off to the brain. You know Roger's the danger man, and this is what they're doing.
You felt like you were looking down on it from somewhere else, you know, there was just so much going on, so much excitement, and that absolutely brilliant. I mean, tension was horrendous, and with it being so close, you were like on tenterhooks right to the very end of the game, so it was very nerve-wracking.
Roger Millward. Now listen, how are you? Because I suspect you spent most of that match in a daze, didn't you?
Yes, I did, Frank. I think I might have knocked the jaw again.
Really? You've done that before, haven't you?
I've had two broken jaws this year, yes. And I think I might just made it in that trick.
Well, you've had a terrific day and a fine match. A final word from you. What are you going to do now?
I think I might go and get drunk, Frank.
Yeah,
I think we deserved it.
You think you'll be able to force a bit between the lips, do you?
I'm getting strong.
Because I'm going to ask Roger Millward to come forward. Come forward and say a few words. Roger.
First of all, I'd like to thank everyone that went down to Wembley. And just to say how proud I am of you, because you're that well behaved. On behalf of the lads and myself, I'd love to thank you for the fantastic support you gave us at the stadium. Thank you.
Courage, his intelligence, his positional sense. You're looking for the flaw in the makeup and you can't find the flaw.
At his peak as a player, Millward had everything. With pace, sidestep, good hands and a varied kicking game in the loose, as well as being a capable goal kicker. He had a great ability to read the game, an impeccable textbook defence and, perhaps most important of all, he never shirked anything on the field. He was unbelievable. He had a heart like a lion.
He was the best I've ever seen in my life, cover defending. You know, if big forwards broke down the middle, by and large, Roger would side them down, you know, coming in cover defence. He was the smallest, which he was the smallest right through his full career. And he played like a giant.
Most brilliant player.
And as a player on the field, he could see things that you couldn't see. But Roger, when Roger wanted that ball, he got it. The next thing you see either Clive Sullivan or Stevie Hubbard or Phil Lowe flying through a gap. And you're thinking, I never saw that.
After his retirement from playing, Millward continued as coach for a further 11 years, winning 6 more trophies to become the most successful coach in the club's history.
Tactically, he was wonderful. I can think of many things where he showed us things and it happened in a game and we managed to play it. So he was a fantastic tactician.
One of the first coaches to go to America. He went to Chicago Bulls, I think, to pick up on training methods and the psychological side and the nutrition and all that sort of stuff.
Roger was the best coach that's ever coached me, and I had some good coaches.
And I could see, just in the training, what sort of a brilliant footballer he was. He was like the Lionel Messi of today. Even at that point, you know, he was just like, he had an aura about him, sort of like, an invisible guard. You couldn't get to him.
Watching Millward play, I thought he was absolutely incredible. His sidestep, his ball handling, everything about him, stunning. I'm black and white, but as far as I'm concerned, Roger Millward's a legend.
When he bowed out at the end of the 1990-91 season, he had been with the club for an incredible 25 years. After leaving Rovers, he had a short spell as coach of Halifax in 1991-92. Awarded the MBE for his services to Rugby League in 1983, Millward was inducted into the Rugby League Hall of Fame in 2000, and Rovers named the main stand at Craven Park the Roger Millward Stand in his honour.
True gentleman, on and off the pitch.
It was all KR supporter. Always.
His strength and his courage that people talk about on the rugby league pitch is tenfold when he left rugby, because when you know what he went through, and he never ever talked about it, never talked about if he were in pain and what have you, right up to the point where he he passed away. What a character. What courage. And you unbelievable. Really well.
Because when I was at junior school, I came home one day and asked my mum if my dad was famous, because somebody at school had said I got a famous dad, and I didn't believe them, because to me it was just my dad.
A true gentleman, on and off the pitch. 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 On and off the pitch.
Yeah, we went to Buckingham Palace. Yeah, I've got a chauffeur-driven car down to Buckingham Palace. The Queen gave him his MBE. So he's actually met the Queen and the Queen Mother, because she presented him with the trophy at Wembley.
Was and he is a legend and an inspiration in every sense of the word.
The road opening in Hull. Oh, we were so proud. It was quite emotional, because when we unveiled the sign and it was red and white, it made it extra special, because it was called the Roger Millward Way rather than just Millward Way. It was just really emotional and just amazing.
As a fella, great bloke. As a father, great bloke. As a footballer, great bloke. As a friend, great bloke. Even when he was really poorly, more worried about other people than himself.
He was my hero, simple as that. He was my hero, he was a hero to thousands of others. He was the reason that I was first involved in rugby league, or a very big part of it, and the reason that I'm still involved in it.
And I used to say to people, if I'd have had a son, Roger Millward would have been my son. Was so proud of his achievements and what he became. What he did for Hull Kingston Rovers and rugby league can only be equaled. He can't be surpassed, because he was so good.
He was one of the greatest, without any doubt. Could do everything, run, pass, tackle, brave as they come, only 5 feet four, but remained so modest.
A long, long way, but it's been very enjoyable, and luckily through rugby league I've been able to see the world.
It's not been a bad life, has it, really?
It's been a wonderful life.